This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
Couple minutes after one, you can email us at nationradio@theteam1260.com with your questions. We're here until 2 o'clock today, and we begin this hour with Lauren Mullican from the Saskatoon Blades, GM coach of the Blades. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You have a very strong connection going back a little over a decade, maybe 12, 15 years, with the Edmonton Oilers on the AHL level.
Well, it was my first opportunity to coach the professional level, and you know, it's something that I'll always cherish. The Oilers are an organization that has a great tradition and learned an awful lot in those days.
And that team developed, it was the 95 to 97 Cape Breton-Hamilton. Was that about right?
Yeah, right in that area.
Yeah.
Right in that area. We started out in Cape Breton, and then the team relocated to Hamilton.
And you had Rem Murray, Greg DeVries, Hullbig, Bonvie. That was a pretty gritty little club you had.
Well, we had a tremendous group of young guys, and you know, basically the big turnaround for us in Hamilton was when Steve Passmore, our goalie, we finally figured out what his injury was or what his illness was, and he was able to play and played extremely well for us, and we had lots of success in Hamilton.
Before we get to the Blades, I have to ask you this, because in reading your bio, you played for Springfield in the AHL in the late 70s. Were you there when Eddie Shore was poking and prodding the players with old-timey medical solutions? Did you get any special jibes or anything?
Well, I'm not that old yet, but certainly Eddie was still around. He ran the rink downtown. We played out of the old Eastern States Coliseum at that time, and you know, it's funny, I just had a visit with Scott Housen, because that is where their farm team is, the Columbus. So it's a situation where, you know, the same people are in Springfield, and it's a great hockey city.
Now, with your team, it's a very tight series with the PA Raiders, who are always a pesky bunch. The series is 2-2 now going into the game tonight. Are you surprised by the fact that it's so close?
Well, you know what? We knew that Prince Albert would play us extremely tough. Their building is a difficult building to play in, and we've had some success there. But we've worked all year to get home ice advantage, and we're sure hoping that that pays huge dividends for us here tonight.
What are they doing well, or what are they doing well at home?
Well, it's they put a lot of pressure on you there, and their fans there really get into the game, really get involved, and you know, anytime that there's a big play or a big hit, the intensity in that building just lifts, and I really believe their team's building off of that. And you know, it's a situation where we've made some mistakes, and they've capitalized on it. So like we said at the top, we knew it was going to be a real tough series.
I grew up in Maidstone, so I know that there's a long tradition of those two teams getting after each other. Is this one of those series that you think is going to be one of the all-time classics?
Well, you know what? It's going to be a great series when it concludes, but you know, the teams are built a little bit differently than they were in the older days. It was a real tough series. This is a series more of skill and speed, and certainly it's been a whole bunch of fun to be involved with.
Let's talk about some of the specifics on both sides of the ice. Mark McNeil, we're hearing he's moving up in the draft rankings as the season wears along, and he's regarded as a power forward type. How much trouble is he to play against?
Well, you know what? He's a tremendous player. He's got great speed. He's got good vision, and he uses both of those assets to his you know, to the best of his ability. And you know, he can be a handful on a given night, and has certainly played extremely well for them here in the last two games.
Curtis Hamilton is a guy we're familiar with, not just because he was selected by the Oilers, but he had a fine World Junior Championships. Has he progressed this year? I know he's healthy, and it looks like he's done a great job. Tell us a little bit about his season.
Well, you know what? Curtis played extremely well for us in the first half of the year, and as a result, had the opportunity to play in the World Junior team. Upon his return, you know, it's taken him a while, or it did take him a while, to get back to where he was before Christmas. But right now we're leaning extremely extremely heavily on him to, you know, be one of our leaders in all situations, and has done a pretty good job for us.
He can come back in the fall to junior, but do you expect him back, or do you expect he'll sign and turn pro?
Well, you know, that'll all depend on what, you know, the Oilers see fit for him to do. But, you know, it's a situation where it's going to be entirely up to Curtis. He's going to have to, you know, really make that commitment as he has in the past, and you know, have a real good training camp, and then things will sort itself out.
Lauren, not specifically with Curtis, but with any, you know, junior player who's been drafted and is eligible to turn pro, would an organization like the Oilers, or any organization that drafts a player on your roster, would they consult with you or talk to you, or did you just find out via phone call or when it hits the press?
Well, it's basically, you know, we don't talk to them about who they're going to sign or what you know, their intentions are. But, you know, as we get closer, you know, we do communicate just to see, you know, what their thoughts are, because they have a lot on their plate, as you know, and certainly like I mentioned, it's what it boils down to is, you know, what Curtis will do at training camp.
And you made at the deadline, or around the deadline, I guess right after the World Juniors, a huge trade for Braden Schenn. Tell us what kind of impact he's had so far.
Well, a huge impact, not only with our team, but within the community. He's done a tremendous job, and everything that's been asked of him, he's fulfilled. And, you know, we're leaning on him as we are with Curtis right now. I believe those two players are leading us in scoring here in the playoffs, and as we move forward, they're going to play a dominant role.
He's a Saskatoon boy, right?
Yeah, he's a local guy, and that was a big part of the trade. It gave us an opportunity to bring him home, finish out his junior career, and he's done a great job for us.
The Blades have a few draft eligibles, so I'm going to run down the list here and get your viewpoint on. Let's begin with Duncan Siemens.
Well, you know what? He's a big, strong kid that plays the games for keeps, and you know, he's highly touted right now, and because of his size and strength and his ability to play the game, you know, with all kinds of intensity, he's a real good young guy, and he's been a lot of fun to be around. And as you know, he comes from that Edmonton area, and I know there's lots of people watching him right now.
Brent Benson is regarded as a solid two-way center. Does he have enough offense? Do you think he'll be able to play at the next level?
Well, you know what? Given the opportunity, he'll have a chance. I think that, you know, Brent hasn't put up a lot of real good numbers for us this year. He's coming off an injury here in the latter part of the season, but he's a guy that you can depend upon in all situations.
And what about the Czech Stransky? What's his style and how good is he?
Well, you know what? He's a big body. He uses it to his advantage. He's one of our best players, you know, as far as playing along the boards. And, you know, he's got a real change in speeds that really helps him in his one-on-one situation. So, you know, he's got an opportunity. He thinks the game extremely well, and, you know, he adapted very well to our game over here.
And you have a few other eligible kids. Tell us a little bit about, is it Darren Dietz?
Well, another real solid defenseman. He's a kid that really has come out of nowhere. You know, he actually played midget in Lethbridge last year and lived with Richie Sutter there along with his son Lucas. And you know, he's been a real pleasant surprise for us. And like I said, he plays the game extremely hard, and we're looking for big things from him.
Any other of the draft eligibles that are some names that we should know about as we approach draft day from the Saskatoon Blades?
No, I think we've been just about touched on everyone. Lucas Sutter is another kid that has got real strong character, great work ethic, but we've touched on them all. I think that you know, it's going to be real exciting for a lot of these kids come June.
You know, one final question before we let you go. Duncan Siemens, he went down, the other night. Is he a game-time decision, or is he going to play tonight?
Well, you know what? He's been treated now over the last day and a half, and he went out for a skate today, and everything seemed to be okay. So we expect him to play tonight.
All right, Lauren, thanks so much, and good luck tonight.
Thanks, appreciate it.
All right, Saskatoon Blades GM and coach Lauren Mulliken, interesting guy, and that is definitely one of the real strong junior hockey cities. And it'll be, I wish I could see that series because they're not that far apart in Saskatchewan terms, PA and Saskatoon, and they've had some great series over the years. And it's kind of cool to talk to him about the AHL years too, because I think it was 97 that Hamilton went, I believe, it's off the top of my head, so I might be wrong. I think he took them to a Calder Cup final. They were an outstanding team, and he did a heck of a job on that. And I'd forgotten about Steve Passmore, obviously. You know, he would he would remember having been there, but that was a great year for Edmonton Oilers fans and in the AHL, watching the AHL team and Hamilton Bulldogs. I have a few questions that we've received via email, so we're going to zip right through them here over the next 5 minutes or so. Got a question from Speeds. What are your thoughts on Edmonton's rebuild? Do you think it was necessary? Do you think management truly believes it was necessary for on-ice reasons? Or do you think there were financial off-ice reasons that either superseded or contributed to whatever on-ice rationale for a rebuild existed? That is a loaded question, I'll say that. I think that it's a matter of new ownership taking over in the summer of 2008, I believe, July around that time. And from that point forward, I think you have to allow ownership a year or so, or maybe even a year and a half, to kind of get a lay of the land. Darrell Cates is obviously was a fan, but he's also a businessman. Wanted to see how things were shaking. The team had gone young with the Chris Pronger trade, and things didn't work out for 06-07, 07-08, and 08-09. And then by the time you get to the summer or the winter of 2009-10, you're looking at a team that's spending half a generation in the second division and almost in the basement. So I think that you could say that the timing was good because there's the arena question and all of those things too. But the Edmonton Oilers at the time that the rebuild word was mentioned, and we know from Oil Change, the first edition, that Darrell Cates was the one who mentioned it first. It was probably a good time for a rebuild. Whether it needed to be as long and deep as it appears to be going forward is another question. But it looks like the Edmonton Oilers, based on what they're doing right now with the college kids signing and with the looking at Hartikainen and Vandeveld, and likely Lander will be the next news that we hear, him signing sometime spring, summer, looking at him in the fall time and the first overall pick. I think that the Oilers may have fallen into some really good timing because, as with a lot of Major League Baseball teams, by the time the new building opens, this team should be ready to roll, and that's a ways off, but that may not be the worst time for it to have happened. So hope that answers the question. We've got something from Jason at yourhockeysite.ca. What do you think they will do with the number one pick if the Oilers get it? I think the smart money is on Larson, but boy, you just don't see teams trade legit number one centers, so it's hard to pass on Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. I'd argue that it's even deeper than that. I think there are legitimately five players who should be considered or will be considered for number one overall. There's two defensemen, Adam Larsson, who everybody knows about in the Swedish Elite League. He's playing more and more minutes as the season and then the postseason in the Swedish Elite League for his team, and he's playing well. He was injured there for one game or one and a half games, but he's playing a big role in the playoffs in the Swedish Elite League, which is against men. And then you've got Dougie Hamilton, who's doing a great job in the OHL. I think he may not be considered for number one, but I bet he is because he's a big guy and he's playing well and he's got all kinds of offense as well. Then you've got Gabriel Landeskog, who's also playing in the Ontario Hockey League. He's a big, gritty winger, and the Oilers need that too. And he's a player who could maybe be NHL-ready above some of these other kids. Sean Couturier doesn't get mentioned much anymore, but he's a big, strong center with two-way skills. And how often have we talked about needing that? If you're an Edmonton Oilers fan, you know how difficult it has been to find that big center. And Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, man, he has played so well and done it at a time of year when we're all kind of paying attention in Edmonton. So he's having, you know, something of a Taylor Hall spring. If he gets deep into the playoffs, maybe it'll be another item like when Taylor Hall was playing in the Memorial Cup and he had the big hit and came back two shifts later and scored a goal, and it had a major impact on the Tyler versus Taylor race, at least in the fans' minds. Maybe that'll be something that happens for Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. But he's a very famous prospect. The thing about him is he's tall but slight, And do the Oilers need another one of those guys? It may mean drafting Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and trading some of the smaller forwards, and that could happen as well. My own preference would be that the Edmonton Oilers draft a forward instead of a defenseman, only because of the developmental time it takes for the defenseman to actually become bona fide NHL players and help you win. If you consider Larson as playing in the SEL, if he comes over here at age 18, probably a couple of years, maybe by 21, he's really helping, and he'll be a free agent. If he plays his first year as a teenager, he'll be a free agent at 25, and that doesn't give you a huge window. Forwards, generally speaking, develop quicker and are less likely to become injured or have injuries that will impact them in a big way from what you expect to get on draft day. So that's my opinion there. Also ask, if it's Larson, do they move up to get a mid-round pick for a center? I think the Oilers will move up. There's a likelihood that they'll at least try to move up anyway, because if they can move up, if they draft Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, say, at number one, if they can move up and pick up Duncan Siemens at 12 to 15, he's a guy that, you know, the Edmonton Oilers could use. And on the other side of it, if they draft Adam Larson, then there's a possibility of trading up to pick up the guy we just talked about from Prince Albert, Mark McNeil. He is an individual who has power forward size, two-way skills, and as Lauren Mullican just mentioned, he is somebody who can play a defensive game as well. I have this coming in from Rich with regard to Steve McIntyre. I've changed my mind in regards to the need for this person in slot as in an enforcer. Last summer, I argued that he could be a nuclear deterrent, but have not seen this happen. Guys still took shots at Hall and Eberle, and the few times Rennie was willing to throw him over the boards, they were not wanting to fight him, and he couldn't skate strong enough to deliver a good hit. So my answer there is that I think Tom Rennie has in mind that Steve McIntyre will become the Edmonton Oilers version of Colton Orr. You know, when Rennie was in New York, he spent a lot of time, and it wasn't just Orr. There were two or three other enforcer types that he tried to develop into players who could actually play on the fourth line, not hurt the team, and be used as that nuclear deterrent, if you will. And I think Steve McIntyre is this team's version of Colton Orr. So I don't expect him ever to play more than five or six minutes a night, and maybe only 40 games a year. But I don't think Steve McIntyre is going anywhere. So whether or not we want to debate it, whether it's wise, I think there's going to be Steve McIntyre or a Steve McIntyre type on the Edmonton Oilers as long as Tom Rennie is coach. The thing we learned this year is that Zach Stortini didn't fill a role that Tom Rennie felt had value. And I think a lot of that had to do with foot speed, not with the character of the guy, because from all reports that we get, Zach Stortini is a top-drawer guy. It was a matter of just, you know, skating ability, and Tom Rennie puts a high value on that, as witnessed by, you know, Andrew Cogliano moving up on the depth chart. Other question from Rich is, any sign of progress on the Anton Lander front? It's interesting. I've been reading some, you know, my Swedish isn't very good, and Google, you know, Translate is not the greatest either, but there is, I think, some online evidence that Anton Lander may sign with the Oilers, because he has to, but he may actually play another year in the Swedish Elite League. At least it's a possibility and something we should maybe ask about moving forward. This is Nation Radio on Edmonton Sports Radio, Team 1260. Our email address is nationradio@team1260.com. Still to come this hour, Greg Drennan from a great WHL blog, and we'll talk to Jim Byers from the Oklahoma City Barons right after this.